We're making a video of Zach fixing his hair right here. This is beautiful.
Gotta get the hair right. Lindsay comes in, hair's perfect.
I don't know. Definitely
my hair.
Definitely not that. But headphone hair is always a good excuse.
Always a good excuse.
Always a good excuse. All right, let's get to work.
Let's get to work.
Let's do this.
Lindsay and I were just in Australia together.
We were.
Here's what I understand about any of you artists who go over to Australia. Okay.
Okay.
I go over to Australia.
Yep.
Is this mic placement okay? I go over to Australia and I'm so jet lagged, I cannot even function all week. Like the whole week. It got better, but I was still, like, pretty screwed up.
Yeah.
Oh, the computer's in the shot? Oh, we're having mic adjustment. Oh, we're pros. Everyone here is a pro. I go over to Australia. I'm screwed up.
Yep.
The jet lag's killing me.
Yep.
All these artists, like, Breland, for example, he showed up, like, 2 days before, 2 days later, he was, like, on stage.
Yeah.
In front of, like, 10,000 people. Mm-hmm. I think you were in town for a minute longer. But don't you just get complete, like, how do you perform on the other side of the world? Isn't it weird? Or is it not that weird?
Is weird. And you're so exhausted, but it's just what you need to do, you know? Like, as an artist, when you know you signed up for this job, it is par for the course. And so there's most of my European tours. We've done, like, 7 European tours now. Most of them you fly in day of. So you land at, like, 8 a.m. or 10 a.m. or something, and you were playing a show that night. And it's just like, yeah, you're so tired. And Australia, thankfully, because it's such a, you know, 180 degree whirlwind. I did fly in a few days early, which was like super, super helpful. But you always kind of still feel.
But just
because
it's what you signed up
off.
For doesn't mean that that's like that you're able to power through it. Like, is it the adrenaline in the crowd that pushes you through?
Definitely the adrenaline. Even just like the adrenaline of like knowing the excitement's coming, you know, and knowing that I get to play a show that's like my favorite out of everything that I do. That's my favorite thing to do in the world.
That's the one thing.
And so, yeah, getting on stage is just like the minute you hear everybody screaming and the lights go down, I'm like, all right, game on, baby.
Let's go. Game
Let's
on.
Go.
I'm experiencing this now because I'm on the road and it sucks for like I've heard you say this in a million interviews, but everyone says this. It sucks for 23 hours and for 1 hour, it's great.
Yep.
When you're on stage, and it kind of makes the whole thing worth it. But everything else is kind of a freaking bummer, isn't it?
I agree, but I think it's also about looking at it as make those 23 hours of the day the best they can be, however that can happen, you know? And I've become, I mean, I really say we travel for a living, and then we just get to play shows as a hobby because it's like mainly our job.
That's what everyone says. Yeah,
is like traveling because we just do so much of it. But there's ways that you can make it easier on you, you know, like traveling with eye masks and good headphones and, you know, getting sleep where you can and like bringing little things with you in a hotel room that make it feel like home, like whether that's a candle or a diffuser or I don't know.
I always bring a book on the road and I swear every time I go on the road, I bring a book and I go, I swear I'm going to finish this book on the road. And I never even open it.
Me either.
Does that happen to you too?
I have.
Why do we even bring the books?
Bringing books.
I always go.
Even,
I'm
like,
going to plenty of time. I'm going to read the whole book. And you never read it.
On international flights, for sure, I bring like 2 or 3 books.
Because
I'm like,
too.
I'm going to have all this time. I'm going to be sitting on a plane being like,
too.
I wish I would have brought my book. But it never happens.
You never open the book once.
However, the hack now I have found, at least for me, is audiobooks. Like I read books so fast because I listen to them at double speed.
Yeah, me too.
And when I'm like running or walking or out shopping or whatever. And so I read so many books now, but I guess I technically listen to books. But yeah,
no,
I read a lot.
Me too. I'll listen to anything. Like I'll listen to a podcast for 2 hours, whatever. But I always bring these physical books with me and I go,
totally.
It never happens. So, okay, wait. So in Australia, Brad called you up and you did Whiskey Lullaby together.
Yeah.
And you guys had done this a million times when you were on the road with him.
Mm-hmm.
But when he calls you up, he was kind of hanging in his bus. He showed up right before he went on and then he walked on and he played. So did you guys run through it or no?
No. I mean, we toured with Brad for like a year and a half.
So
and Brad
you know
is
what's
like
up. You know
an older brother to me almost. Yeah. However, I haven't seen him in years.
Yeah.
And the first time I saw him was on stage because, you know, he's busy getting ready for a show. And so I didn't want to bug him like before he went on stage. And so I just watched a show and then he called me out and he's like, hey, how's it going?
And does
and I'm
someone
like, hey, how's it
from
going?
Brad's team come to you and say, hey, Brad wants you to do Whiskey Lullaby for him or does he
so
text
we,
you?
We were ended up texting earlier on in the day and being like, oh my gosh, we're playing the same festival. Amazing, amazing. And he just texted me, want to do whiskey? And I was like, yes, I would love to. And so we, when we were on tour, we had figured out this like really cool electric guitar, like dueling electric guitar solo and like guitar-many at its finest. And he was like, but I just played on acoustic. And I'm like, great, because I would have had to go back and study like what we did. But yeah, it's just like riding a bike, you know?
Right. You go back, you just get your guitar, you go out there and you just kind of winged it. You just kind of winged it a little bit.
But songs like Whiskey Lullaby are so iconic, and yeah. You know, I think they're entrenched in our brains as, you know, listeners who have been a fan of country music for sure. But you know, and being on tour with Brad for a year and a half, I mean, I've heard that song and sang that song so many times.
It comes quick.
Yeah, I can do it in my sleep. It's just such a hit.
When you play with a band like Corey Wong's band, like you just had a single with Corey Wong. Every time I'm looking at you,
yeah.
When you play, are you comfortable playing with that band, or is that a little bit outside your comfort zone?
I will say it is my favorite thing to walk on stage with a band in the caliber of what Corey Wong's band are. They're all just such incredible musicians. The first time I felt that, actually, I remember I was 18 years old. I was on tour with Buddy Guy.
Yeah.
Like Buddy Guy, if people don't know who he is, he's like blues pioneer, legend guitar player. And we were opening up for him. I was playing at a trio at the time. And I remember he invited me out on stage. I had no idea he was going to call me out. And he was like, Lindsay, we're in G. And that was the only thing he said. And I like walked out on stage and I was just this like short little blonde Canadian at the time. And his band started. And all of a sudden, I just became a different player. Like I just became a different musician because there's... I don't know, a different foundation that you can walk on as a musician, that it just gives you inspiration and gives you courage to go into places of your creativity that you wouldn't normally go.
Yeah.
And I definitely felt like that with Corey Wong. Corey and I became friends throughout the pandemic. He was coming here to write a lot, working on his next record. And so we just got together and wrote a bunch of songs, and obviously are both guitar nerds in our own right. And he's just so good. Like Corey plays perfectly. I always give Brad heck for, like, you know, never making a mistake. Like he can play a whole entire show and never flubs anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But Corey Wong, man, you can like record Corey and he is like perfectly quantized. Like he is like perfect.
That's what I was gonna bring up.
It is so annoying and it's so amazing to watch. And so playing next to Corey Wong, I'm like, I better step it up because he is perfect. Like he plays like...
So does his band too, I feel like. I feel like the whole band is like...
They're so
in
good.
In perfect time. It's weird. It almost sounds like you almost want it to like not be in perfect time. It's almost too perfect.
Oh my God, not to me. It's just, it has so much soul in it. And then it allows me to like kind of dance on top of it. So guitar wise, I lock in as much as I can to Corey.
What does he bring to the writer's room? Is it the sense of melody and guitar playing? And then on that song, were you mostly contributing lyrics, or is Corey like a sneaky lyrical guy? Like, is he bringing lyrical content to the room?
He does a bit of everything, but I remember every time I look at you when we started, He had like a little melody idea from the get-go and had like a couple guitar licks, and that's usually where I start writing too. So yeah. We definitely kind of were on the same page in that point. And it was just such a jam that I just started singing every time I look at you. And I was just like, okay, this is something. And now like a lot of my friends have been like, this is my favorite song you've ever recorded.
I love it.
I've listened to it.
You said to him, cause you were on his podcast.
Yeah.
And you said to him something interesting, because I've always heard Corey say that he's like a lead rhythm guitar player.
Yeah.
And I've always kind of accepted that.
Yeah.
And then you said to him, you were like, don't say that. You're so much more than a lead rhythm guitar player. Is that, but I almost think that's like, I almost think that's like a cool thing. Is that, do you think that's him like being on himself a little bit, being down on himself?
Yeah. I mean, I think that Corey, because he is so great. Yeah. I think that we're all, as musicians, we're hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think Corey is definitely hard on himself. And when he says he's like a lead rhythm guitar player, is that how he says it?
Yeah. That's what he says.
I'm like, that's a little crap is what that
you're
is.
Just, yeah.
Cause I've seen Corey play and he can like dig in, man. He can play incredible things, but I also so respect a musician that knows how to sit in the pocket. And if anything, like finds something cool and then stays there. Like there is a beautiful ceremony around that place of like finding like,
yeah.
And like living there. And when you watch him play with Wolfpack, his band, which if anybody has not heard of Wolfpack, please go watch them. Like, please do yourself a favor. They're so insane. And Corey just finds these little parts that like Wolfpack wouldn't be who they are without Corey's playing. And so he can go off. Like, let me just say, put it on the record right now that he can totally go off. But he chooses a lot of time not to, which I so respect.
Have you dived into, because you're obviously an amazing guitar player. I feel like if I came across Corey Wong when I was younger, I would have put so much time into studying that technique.
Yeah.
Now I've just decided I'm never going to become like, I just don't even touch it. I'm like, I can't even dive into whatever that, I don't even know what that is. Do you dive into that at all? Do you go, man, I'd love to be able to play some of that syncopated 16th note funk stuff, or do you kind of just say, I'll leave that to Corey Wong?
I love funk music so much. Yeah. Like, it is what inspires me almost the most right now from a playing perspective. And so, yeah, I love to dive into it. I don't practice as much as I used to when I was a little girl, when I was playing guitar in my bedroom for 8 hours a day. Like, I just don't have 8 hours a day to practice.
I would have
been
practicing Corey Wong if I was at that age.
Exactly. Yeah. And I remember I was playing, like, at that time, I was playing like Tommy Emmanuel and Stevie Ray Vaughan and Jimi Hendrix and Eric Clapton. And so, yeah, now if I get time to practice, I will definitely step into that stuff.
That stuff's unreal. So, okay, wait. So Lindsay's not here for her health. There's so much going on. There's a new show that you were just on.
Yeah.
Which is American Anthems on PBS. Mm-hmm. And I just watched this recently.
You did. Yeah,
it was really touching. So basically, the show goes around to these ordinary might not be the right word, but to these people who are ordinary people who have done something extraordinary.
Yeah, these regular humans walking on the street, looking at them, you'd be like, that's a human being. And then you get to really meet them throughout each episode. Each episode features a new hero and a new artist. And so they pair up an artist with a hero. And you get to meet these. I met Greta, was my hero, Greta McLean.
She was a retired police officer.
Yes.
And so they team you up with her and you guys meet and is there any context about?
There's not really context, but the show, of course, is very smart of teaming up each artist with a hero that maybe relates to their own story or you have common ground somehow. Greta McLean's story, she's just incredible. She actually worked as a cop in the sexual harassment unit. And then shortly after she retired, she was assaulted and raped and herself. And my story as a survivor, I came out with my story a few years ago when I wrote the song Make You off my last record. And so getting to meet her and just getting to talk about both of our stories and our experiences and me starting my own foundation and her starting her own foundation. She started this foundation called Silent No Longer and just wants to be an advocate for other survivors and helping them find healing and helping them find growth. And she just is such a beautiful human being. And so the show is such a cool idea because it teams up an artist with, you know, what looks like a regular human being. And then you get to know them and your heart is like pouring out for them. And then at the end of the episode, it's like, I'm going to surprise Greta and her friends with a show. And what she doesn't know is I wrote a song for her in the episode.
Nobody knows this. This is the concept of the show. I think this happens in every episode.
It does.
But she didn't know because the show.
She had no idea.
She didn't know.
She just thought I was going to go play a couple songs for her friends.
You said to her, you were like, gather some friends and let me
play a couple songs for you. Yeah. You know, we'll celebrate just being a part of this TV show. It's amazing. Yeah. So she thought that was the end of the deal. And then
I thought it was all about Lindsay.
I mean, I guess so. Yeah, exactly. When it's like, no, Greta, this is all about
you. We're flipping
you.
It on you. Yeah, right.
And so, I called my friend Christian Bush because we worked on my first record together. I've written with him for years. And so we wrote a song for Greta about her story. It's called Let the Words Come Out. And then play it live on the episode. So this all happens in the course of like hours.
Yeah.
And she was so touched. She was crying on camera. And I like signed my guitar and gave it to her. And it was just a beautiful moment. And then the whole season airs and PBS loved our song so much. They were like, this song is so special from the season. It's just one of our favorites and we really want to release it. And I was like, really? We want to release it? And they were like, yeah, I think it's amazing how it can just empower people to shine light on their own stories and know how much, you know, light that can give you when you do that. And so we released it and we're actually going, it's under consideration for a Grammy, which is insane.
I was reading that in the press release. That
which is so crazy.
Are you going to play this? Have you played this live yet?
I have played it live.
Did you play this in Australia?
No, I didn't play it in Australia. I should have played it in Australia.
You should have played it in Australia.
Is that are next you show you're at? I will play it for you.
Just when I own, when am I going to be at another?
I mean, never say never. We just followed each other across the world.
No, I think I'm going to be at another Lindsay L show, guaranteed. I just don't know if I want to wait that long for the song to enter the set.
Well, we can. I can make that happen. Actually, we have a few shows next week. So.
Oh, okay. Are you gonna do it full band? Because it's sort of stripped down the recording.
So yeah. So on the show, Christian and I just played it for her and her friends, and we decided to release the recording from the episode because that's what just makes it so special.
Right.
But yeah, I actually think I'm gonna produce a full version of it.
Yeah,
and
I think
when
you
I would play it with my band, it would
be full band.
It'd be full band.
You know what killed me about that episode that was just so emotional was when she said that she thought she should have been able to fight off her attacker because she was a retired policeman, and that's a part of what kind of ate her up inside.
It's so true.
The story was so emotional to listen to. It was actually really, like, I think everybody has to go and watch this series and has to watch this episode especially.
Yeah, they really need to go look at American Anthems. I mean, so many incredible artists, Jennifer Nettles and Lee Bryce and Cam, all just work with incredible people. But yeah, Greta McLean's story is really, really inspiring.
This is a cool show.
Thank you.
I think people have to go watch and they have to listen to the song and check it out. And Lindsay's on another show as well.
Yeah.
Canada's Got Talent.
Yeah.
Hosting it. So I wanted to talk to you about this because you golden buzzered the winner of Canada's Got Talent.
What can I say?
But here's what I need to bring up, Lindsay. Okay. Here's what I want to talk about. You really claim this because you've really done this, but I feel like everybody in the room was like, undeniable, this one was amazing, and then you run up and golden buzzer, you're like, mine, right? Didn't you kind of claim it before anyone else could?
Here's the thing. So in Canada's Got Talent, first off, it's amazing hosting a TV show. It's always been something I've wanted to do, and like, music is always my first and foremost love, but it's just been so much fun to be
on TV.
This is
cool. You're really great in this.
Thank you, you're really cool.
Sweet.
You're really great at being a podcast host.
Oh, my God.
But I will say, okay, Janique Fournier is her name. And she walks on stage. And let me just set the world straight here. That like golden buzzers bring them right through to the semifinals. So there are a lot of people in auditions who get four yeses. Like there was no question she was going to get four yeses because she was amazing.
I didn't realize that that's the power of the golden buzzer.
But the golden buzzer puts them, like guarantees them a spot in the next round. And just certain people deserve that moment, you know, deserve that moment of having like gold confetti falling on them. And, you know, and so when I met Janique Fournier, I was told a little bit about her story. And then as the host, I pre-interview everybody before they walk out on stage. I'm the last person they talk to before they go out on stage. And I'm the first person they talk to when they come off. So sometimes if the performance goes great, it's an amazing job. And sometimes the performance doesn't go great, it's a really difficult job. But Janique was amazing. And she comes up and has like frizzy hair, sort of like Susan Boyle. Do you remember Susan Boyle?
This is kind of the Susan Boyle moment.
It is.
And she sings I Dream a Dream and everyone goes insane.
Everyone goes
this
insane.
This was like Canada's Susan Boyle moment.
It totally was like Canada's Susan Boyle. But the part that even made it more special is she's a palliative care nurse. She adopted two children with Down syndrome. She just emits light. Like she is talking to you. She speaks en français. She speaks in French and knows a little bit of English.
Do you speak French?
Un petit peu. I took 7 years of French and I know how to say like dog.
Like nothing.
Christmas tree. Yeah. Like
I mean, I took Spanish. I can't speak Spanish.
I know. I can understand it a lot more than I can speak it. But Janique was just so amazing. And she was like such a beautiful person inside and out. And then you close your eyes and she walks out on stage and it honest to God sounds like you're listening to Celine Dion.
Oh my God. Like, she was incredible.
She sounded like Celine Dion. And I was like, this woman deserves a moment on the show. Like I don't even, who knows who's going to win, who knows whatever. And at that point, when we were shooting auditions, none of the judges had hit the golden buzzer. And we were all sort of like waiting.
Does everybody only get one golden buzzer?
Everyone only gets one golden buzzer.
But there are five that can be pressed.
Yes.
And nobody's pressed one yet.
And nobody had pressed one yet. And everybody was sort of like, well, you don't want to hit it too early.
No.
What if something amazing is coming? But Janique was just so special that I was like, I need to do it. I guess I'll be the first one, which I didn't want to be.
And you walked across the stage.
I walked across the
stage.
Down
the steps.
Interrupted everybody down the steps and was like, Janique, I believe in you. I believe in your story. You're such a beautiful human. I choose you. And like pressed the golden buzzer. And she was so sweet. She had like her arms up in the sky and she was like circling around and she was crying. It was such a beautiful
moment. Were you
moment.
Worried that someone might have pressed it before you got the chance? Did you have to walk briskly to that golden buzzer?
Not really, actually, because I think all of us were like waiting. We didn't want to press it too early. And I was just like, no, this is too special. This moment needs to be.
Anyone else go on after they went, oh, shoot, maybe I should have all.
I mean, yeah, it was so funny. Actually, a few acts later, Howie pressed his golden buzzer. Howie Mandel was like, yeah. We need to press some golden buzzers.
That's the one. Yeah. Right. So when you do this, because I've always worried about this. So the people show up, the guests, or I guess the talent, mm-hmm. show up. And do you have any pre-interview or anything? Or you have no idea who they are? They don't give you anything?
I have no idea.
You have no idea. So they show up. And then what do you ask them?
It depends. Like, sometimes they'll be like, okay, Zach is coming on. He is performing a world record. And that's all they will tell me.
Yeah.
And so, because they want naturally me to like pull story from somebody or like discover, you know, that their dad is here supporting them and their dad was did the same thing when they were, you know, they want me to naturally find right. these things. So I'm usually given their name and like one piece of information of what they're doing, or they are a dancer. Like, it's very vague.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty of it. You know, it's like happy accidents of what happens on camera.
So you pull the stories out and they go on. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, what is your role afterwards? To basically just summarize the experience that they had on the show?
Like, I try to be their best friend. So if they got 4 yeses, we're celebrating. It's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
Oh my God,
we'll
Mom.
See you in semifinals. Mom, come here. Like, whoa. It's just a very happy moment.
Yeah.
If they get 4 no's. Or, like, if they get buzzed off, if they get 4 buzzers.
Oh, my God. What do you do then?
It is so hard. Like I remember last season, these people would just come, and their head was hanging, and they were defeated. They were so sad. And it's just like, I'm so sorry. You know, you did – I'm proud of you. Like, better luck next time. And I – granted, I know what that feels like as a performer, to have an amazing show, and I know what it also feels like to have a show that nothing went right. Yeah. And so I can kind of see eye to eye with them, but it is hard, man. There were a few acts last season that I was just like, because you know. You just know the feeling in the room. It just didn't go as they wanted it to.
I just think you have to brush that. You just have to say, sorry, bro.
Yeah, it's okay.
You gotta get out of here. You're giving me a bad energy. You're done.
I know.
Move along.
I mean, sometimes I need to, but I also want to be that consoling, you know.
Empathetic.
It's okay. Yeah.
One time I was, you know.
Exactly.
Not that talented.
But we all.
And then I turned 7 or whatever. I don't know. Like.
We all mess up from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine. This is really, is there a moment where you guys ever hang with, like, do you and Howie ever hang?
Yeah, all the time.
Really?
Me and the judges are friends. We have, like, this group text that we text all the time.
He's 67. Doesn't he look unbelievable?
Howie Mandel looks unbelievable, but he also is just the funniest dude.
He's like, hilarious, right?
He is who he is on camera every day. Like, backstage, he is, like, cracking jokes.
When you were on his podcast, I think?
Yeah.
And he called someone. Was that a random number or was it someone related to you?
Okay, so Howie will do this on his podcast. He will just call random numbers. He will literally pick up the phone and dial 9 or 10 random numbers and then just see what happens and then ask them a random question. So we ended up getting this woman from Canada, actually, where I am originally from. I'm from Calgary, but we ended up getting this woman from a city in Canada called Regina.
He was like 5 years old with this with this city called Regina. He couldn't get over it.
Yeah,
he was so
exactly.
thrilled about this city being named Regina.
Because the slogan of Regina is the city that rhymes with fun.
Yeah, right.
And he just couldn't get over it. And so he was asking this poor woman all these questions. And she was kind of laughing and also being like, is this real? Is this a prank call? And so it's just so funny what he does on his podcast. It's amazing.
She was great because she was like, I don't want to talk to you. And then she opened up and then she like... And then she started just spilling everything about her life.
It was incredible.
Yeah, no, it was really funny. So okay.
Maybe we should add this into your podcast.
I was thinking about. I don't know if we should really do it. Should we randomly call someone or not?
I don't know.
That's
I mean,
so
there's
intense.
Like there's rules. You need to like ask permission that they are cool with it or something.
I actually really wanted to do it, but maybe we'll do it at the end. So okay. If it derails the whole thing, we'll just say that's it. We're done. Walk out. Okay, wait. So the show's happening. Season. It's all shot live, right?
It's we shoot the auditions because then we need to like pick the winners, and then we shoot semifinals, and then we pick the finalists, and then we shoot finals.
So the new season starts October.
So the new season, we start shooting in a couple weeks.
You start shooting in a couple weeks.
And then we'll shoot semifinals in January, and then it all starts airing, and the finale is live.
Okay.
And last year, Simon Cowell flew up for our finale, which was amazing.
Oh my God, nice guy.
Such a nice guy.
Really?
Such a nice guy. Such a fascinating guy. Like, yeah. He's done TV for so long, and so all of us were just like picking his brain, and he was so cool and like so generous with his time. And the coolest thing about it is Trish, one of the judges, was like, "Hey Simon, do you want to get added to our group chat, you know, our group text?" And he was like, "I actually don't have a cell phone." And
what?
We were like, "What? You're Simon Cowell. How do you not have a cell phone?" And he was like, "A few years ago it was just controlling my life. And I just needed a break from it." So he turned it off for a week, and a week turned into a month, and a month turned into a year. And now that was like 5 years ago or something. And I'm like,
how do you get
that
in touch
is
with
amazing.
Him?
Well, he has enough people around him all the time that he's surrounded by, you know, whoever.
Don't you ever think about that? Like, I think if I could ditch social media and
I would have so much time.
And not feel
so much free time.
Like a bigger loser for ditching it than I am for having it. Like,
be amazing.
Wouldn't that be great?
It'd be amazing.
How do you get to that level? Some people are at that level where they just don't even bother. And like, and it's like, doesn't even matter.
That's so crazy.
That's horrible. Okay, so Canada's Got Talent.
Yeah.
Canada's Got Talent.
Mm-hmm.
About to start shooting again.
Yeah.
And then what's happening with the music? Are we going? Are you on the road constantly, basically?
Dude, I have been on the road constantly. I feel like I've been on the road, other than COVID, constantly for the past 10 years. Like,
yeah.
It is the place that makes me the most happy. But yeah, this summer we were on the road with Little Big Town. We were touring with Blake Shelton last year. And then we just finished a month in Europe. I was in Germany. And then opening up for the Cadillac 3 in the UK, and then in Australia for a few weeks. And so it's been an incredible year so far. We have like a few more festivals, and of course shooting Canada's Got Talent. But then I'm home in the studio, and I'm so excited.
Who are you going in the studio with?
Right now I'm just working with a bunch of writers that I love and like creating, and I'm like honing in my next record. And so right now it's in the experimenting stages.
Is that the best phase of the record?
It is
when
totally
it's like,
the best.
What are we going to do?
Yeah, and it's like, for once, I am really just trying to make music that's inspiring me. I think I've always been trying to, at least for the past couple years, like coming out of COVID, I think I've been always trying to, okay, the music needs to fall in this certain lane, and it needs to be this, and it needs to have this, and it needs to say this. And I'm just like, no. Like, my favorite artists are artists that march to the beat of their own drum, and I'm like, if I continue to try to walk in this lane that isn't me, it's just going to take me further and further away from my heart and my integrity and what I want to say and what the artists that I truly look up to are, you know, muses of. And so right now I'm just like creating exactly what makes me happy. I'm like a kid in a candy store every single day.
In the studio.
Yeah.
I feel like, do you consider yourself, like, when you really think about it, like, I think you've been marketed as a country artist, but mm-hmm. do you feel like you're a country artist, or do you, like, Corey Wong on his podcast, he was like, I think Lindsay is just a pop artist.
Yeah.
Do you kind of feel that way, just internally?
Yeah, I feel like great music and great artists
transcends, or
yeah, transcends, and it's not about the genre lines, you know. I understand that as a marketing department, you sometimes need specifics of how to market something, but when I look at my favorite artists like John Mayer and Sheryl Crow and Tom Petty, like, yeah, you can see what charts their songs have had success on that are maybe in genre categories, but they transcend those lines, you know. It's the mosaic of everything that comes together, like the way they sing, the way they play their instruments, the songs they write, the way they perform them, that make them who they are, and nobody else touches that space because
right.
it's so unique. And that's what I'm focusing on right now. And so, yeah, if anything, I wouldn't necessarily like brand it as one thing. I'm just trying to make music that feels authentic to me, and then finding the right places to market it. And if it lies in country, great. If it lies outside of country, great. I think music is just meant to be enjoyed. And when it comes from that place of inspiration within an artist, or when an artist sings it from that place, I think it feels authentic to an audience. And when it doesn't, I think that also feels weird to an audience. An audience can pick it up if an artist isn't being true to themselves.
Yeah. So when you go into the studio to start working on this new album, mm-hmm. first of all, are you like, or do you go into an actual studio, or do you go into like, a writer's room or like a friend's home studio?
All
or like,
of the above.
All the above. All Isn't the it kind above. Of expensive, though, to go into like a big studio just to kind of mess around and kind of see what you're going to do?
Yeah.
Or is it worth it because the vibe is just so good?
It is expensive, but everything is expensive, you know?
Expensive.
And it's like it is worth the money to invest in yourself. And sometimes with the right people, when you feel the moment is right, you need to do the thing in order to figure out if it's the right thing. Like you can't always like observe it from the writer's room only and be like, okay, I think this is something. Like sometimes you just need to go into the studio and record a few songs. And sometimes they're going to be awesome and it's going to be exactly what you need. And sometimes it's not and it's okay.
Right.
Every single artist, all of my friends who are artists have gone into studios and recorded projects. I mean, I recorded a bunch of songs last year that I'm probably never ever going to release, which is crazy at one point. And also at the other end of the spectrum, it's just part of the process. You know,
right.
You need to create, and you need to create at a point of failing is okay. Because if you're so scared of spending money to the point where, okay, this needs to be the next thing, this needs to be the song that's going to change my life. This, like, I have created from a place like that for a while years ago, and it's just like it's so stifling creatively. So you need to be okay that if it's not going to work out,
right?
And
but, oh yeah, yeah,
and then it's like happy accidents when it does.
But when you go into the studio, is it they're normally like, hey, we're going to go into the studio and we're going to try to record these four or five songs, or will you ever book studio time and go into the studio and have nothing and say we're going to figure it out on the studio floor? Because to me, that sounds expensive.
Okay, that is expensive. And I know a lot of my friends who have done that.
Who do that.
You know, like I know like that's how John Mayer records a lot. And it's just like, man, that's so wild to me. Like,
right.
Like taking a studio for 4 months or something and being like, all right, I'm going to write my next record in this point. Like, I prefer to craft in a writer's room and craft with my friends and collab and spend a lot of time by myself and like figure out what I want to say and how I want to say it and start things. And I have a studio in my house that I spend a lot of time in. And so I prefer to craft at least the start of things. And then the studio is where you explore those ideas. You know, like I would feel weird walking into a studio with nothing because I'm like, okay, where do we start? I prefer to at least come with ideas, and then it's like the egg has already been cracked, you know? Then you can like dive in and really see what's there.
Right, right, right. Do you live in an apartment or a house?
I live in a house now.
House. You used to live in an apartment, right?
All the time. And I, my poor neighbors.
That's
like,
what I was going to ask.
My poor neighbors.
Poor neighbors, right?
It's just like there's no other way. And I mean, thankfully living in Music City, it kind of comes with a territory. Like if you do live here, it's like you're probably going to be living next to or close to somebody in the music industry. Yeah, and either they're like a producer or a drummer or a guitar player or something. And so it's kind of like the apropos of living here, which is nice. But also my poor neighbors, I'm just so grateful for them. I do remember they were so patient with me because my last house, I was sharing walls. And I decided to do a 24-hour live stream when my last record, Heart Theory, came out. Because I have these crazy ideas sometimes. And I bust on Broadway when my single, By the Way, like years ago came out. And I busked on Broadway for 24 hours straight. It was like insane. I thought it was going to be fine. But by hour 24, I like barely had a voice left. Because, you know, no human is supposed to sing for 24 hours
right,
straight.
Right, right,
but,
right. Sounds sexy at first.
Sounds sexy,
sounds
yeah,
like a great
exactly.
idea.
The label loved the marketing idea. And I was actually like, what have I signed up for? But I decided to do the crazy thing again because I'm just insane.
Yeah.
And
it's your thing. Yeah.
And in the middle of the pandemic, it's like we had all of this stuff planned for my album release and we couldn't do any of it because we were all locked in our houses. And so thankfully my band and I had quarantined a lot together. And so I decided to do this 24-hour live stream, and I had guests who would come on like Instagram Live with me from all over the world.
You had great guests on.
Every time zone around the world.
Yeah.
And but it meant that like it 3 a.m. and every hour I would play like a few songs. I'd bring on a guest, I'd talk or whatever. And so at like 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m., I was playing music in my house because I had to because
it was the thing
I signed up for. And my neighbor was not happy. I remember she called. She like came and knocked on the door and she was like, I have a meeting tomorrow morning at 8 a.m.
Yeah,
and my boss is not going to be okay with me not being well slept. And I was like, I'm so sorry. So we ended up like going outside. We like went downtown.
And this is happening live.
This is happening live.
So you're having to deal with this live.
Live.
With thousands of people
watching.
Yeah,
we heard like the knock below and my manager talking to my neighbor. And I was like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do?
Oh my God.
You know, it's par for the course for
this
live stream.
This happens to me too. Sometimes my neighbors will knock on my door.
Really?
Yeah. And you know what normally happens is sometimes I just kind of ignore them. And then sometimes they just kind of go away.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But what's funny is my next door neighbor. So the neighbor on my left side always complains and knocks on my door. And it's like, you know,
do they listen to your podcast?
I don't know if they do. No, screw them. I don't care. And then the neighbor on the other side always blasts really loud hip hop.
Oh, great.
And no. Because whenever they blast hip hop, I get really pissed off. And I go like bang on their door and I tell them to shut up. But then I'm completely not empathetic at all. Like when my neighbor over here makes a lot of noise, I get really pissed. And when I make a lot of noise, I get mad at the neighbor yelling at me.
Yeah, see, you can't do that.
I can't win.
When your neighbor blasts loud hip hop music, you should be like, yeah, dude, I see you. I see you. You blast your music because I'm going to be blasting my
music
later.
That's what I should do. But I just naturally am not in that state. Like my natural reaction is different.
It's just anger.
It's just anger. But normally in my defense, they normally do it like late at night when I'm trying to sleep.
Okay, that's not cool.
That's not cool, right?
Yeah.
That's not cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want to ask you, I feel like you collaborate with a lot of international people.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you were in Australia, you brought out Kaylee Bell.
Yeah.
And you did a song with her that you wrote over the pandemic. Do you think that sometimes people in Nashville get so stuck into writing with who is geographically close to them? And are people missing out by not writing with people in Australia and the UK and
I think it was one of the silver linings around the pandemic is you got to collaborate with people anywhere, because it didn't matter. You know, it could be your next door neighbor you're Zooming with, or it could be somebody in Australia or in the UK. And before, like, writing songs on Zoom was not really a thing we did as songwriters, because we were like, oh, we'll just wait till we're in the same room. But when it was left that was the only option, I think we just were really encouraged to do more of it. And it helped me, you know, collaborate with even artists that were like, yeah, next time I'm in Australia, we should do something. And all of a sudden it was like, okay, let's do something next Tuesday. And so, yeah, Kaylee and I have always wanted to do a song together. I was writing with so many producers and writer friends of mine from the UK and from Germany and a few other artists from Australia. And so Kaylee and I recorded this song completely on opposite sides of the world. And also recorded the music video. She like recorded her portion of the music video and wore this like suit. The song's called Living Free, so she found the suit with like a whole bunch of $100 bills on it or whatever, and then mailed me the suit.
Oh my
so
God.
I could wear the same suit in the music video, and then I shot my portion of the music video.
I haven't seen this music video. I need to watch this.
And then we edited it together.
I need to watch this. Oh my God.
So it's just cool. It's amazing what you can do when you really lean into technology. Like the world just becomes such a small place.
Yeah. Do you think like oftentimes people in Australia or the UK will send me these country songs and they go, I've got the next big country song, and I listen to it and I go, that's not quite what's coming out of Nashville, or that's not quite it. It's very different. Even though it sounds like it should be similar, it's very different. Like, do you find that when you write with someone in Australia or the UK, are their country sensibilities different?
Yes.
It is, right?
Very much so. And I think it always should, you know.
Yeah.
I think that it's part of like a country having their own flair, and you know, it would be unfair to think that producers in Nashville are going to sound the same as producers in Australia or Canada or the UK or even LA. You know, like every epicenter of creatives has its own vibe. And I think also that's what makes it so special. And when you get to collaborate with producers from a completely different country, I also think that's what makes a song so unique, is because you get to kind of blend all of your tastes together.
Yeah, right. I think it's a cool thing.
Yeah.
I think it's cool. Okay, the last record, Heart Theory.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, we need like a lot more music from Lindsay L. We need another album.
She's going in the studio right now. Yeah.
She's in the makes, guys. Here's what I want to ask about Heart Theory. And I'm ready to ask this question and for you to give me the answer. And I'm going to say, oh, yeah, right.
Okay.
But this last record, Heart Theory, was about the seven stages of grief. Each song represented a different stage, right? But there were 12 songs on the record.
Yeah.
What were the, because I listened to this record and I try to figure out
What was which?
And I kind of think I know. But there's like five songs that don't have a stage of grief associated to them.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes stages of grief, like everybody experiences them in different ways. And sometimes they take a little bit longer than one song, you know? So,
oh, is that what it is?
That's, yeah, so you have
some of
like,
the stages were passing over into different songs.
Exactly. So you have like Hits Me is the first song on the record and it's Shock. And then you have like I Don't Love You and that's Denial. And then you have, you know, there's anger and there's depression, and those have a couple songs each. And then there's bargaining. Bargaining is a very complicated thing. That's body language of a breakup. And then, you know, you go in like all the way. Finally, you end up in a place of acceptance. And so it's part of the journey of it. And because I'm like, okay, well, my album's going to be definitely longer than seven songs, but this is what it was about. And I wanted the record to really sound like a musical diary, so I could listen to the songs top to bottom, or anybody could listen to the songs top to bottom and hear me like slowly unravel, go through my process, and know that we are all going through our own processes, whatever we're experiencing in life, you know, and constantly going through our own processes. You know, it's not just like you do this once and you're like, okay, I'm good. Like we're constantly being questioned and being challenged and going through, you know, breakups and losing jobs and moving across the country and going through global pandemics and whatever it may be. Like we're constantly being challenged in life. And I just think it's like a beautiful process to surrender to and know that you're going to finally end in that place of acceptance where you can look back and be grateful for everything that has fallen in your path and made you who you are.
Yeah, right. Is there another concept for record that you want to do, or does it come to you in the creation process? Like, do you have any idea?
It does. I have so many ideas of like records that I want to make. I love concept albums. I think they're so fun and they flourish like a whole new brand of creativity.
What do you think is the best what's a favorite concept album?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. One of my favorite concept albums that I made is when I recorded John Mayer's Continuum.
Is that a concept album?
I guess, I don't know. That's more of like a cover album. I guess Heart Theory is more of a concept album because it was on the 7th.
There's a concept there.
Yeah. I guess when Lady Gaga did Jolaine.
That's kind of a concept
album.
That's
totally
right?
A concept album. Yeah. And it was like so different than what she did before on any other project. And so I just think it's cool. It's also cool for fans to see like different sides of you, you know, so they can learn all of the dimensions that go into making you you. Again, like not checking that I'm only country music and I only do these things. Like I think true artists have so many different dimensions to their personality.
Yeah, right. Okay, so Lindsay's going back into the studio. Mm-hmm. There's a new record coming.
Yep.
I'm ready for new Lindsay L music.
I'm so ready, dude. I will have one song out in a few weeks.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Let the Words Come Out is right now. But I will have an album next year, I can promise you.
I can't believe how tight you are with your band. Didn't your band drive down to Louisiana with you to get your puppy?
Yeah.
I feel like I go on the road with my band, and when I'm not on the road with them, I don't want to see them
at all.
You're
like, peace out?
I'm like, I see you all the time. I don't want to spend any time with you.
I know.
Sounds like you guys are hanging out.
I've been so lucky to have, like, the best bandmates for years and years. And even throughout COVID, my band changed a lot, you know, my bass player started his own nonprofit in town, and my guitar player wanted to just be a producer, and my front of house had a baby, and like all these things,
it's
these
like,
life
whoa,
things.
We need a band. How long has your guitar player been with you? Recently, or is he?
This guitar player that you saw me play with in Australia has been pretty recent.
Holy cow, that guy is an incredible musician.
He's amazing.
And he plays keys too, and he sounds like
so amazing.
Billy Joel. He was unbelievable.
He went to college
went to college.
I mean, he is like studied. Piano,
he's
like this, a
that
different
dude was
level.
Unreal on the keys.
He's insane.
Oh my god,
he's so talented. But yeah, so when I wanted to adopt a dog, I've loved dogs. I've grown up with them, and I always thought I traveled too much to get a dog. But shortly in COVID, I was just over living alone within four walls by myself, and I was like, I need a dog, man. But I wanted to rescue a dog, of course, and so I found this dog in New Orleans that I loved, fell in love with, and I was just gonna get in my car and go pick her up, and Eric and Austin, my bandmates at the time, were like, you are not going by yourself. And so we literally got in the car, drove 7 hours down to New Orleans, picked up a po' boy, a beignet, and a dog, and then got in the car, turned around, and came back.
And it was, you didn't get sick of spending time with the band?
No,
we love hanging out together. I can't understand it. And I love my band, too. I love the guys in Temecula Road. They're not my band. I love hanging out with them, but I just get sick of anyone. I don't like spending that much time with anyone.
I'm so careful when I do hire somebody as a part of my band. Like, it is, yes, how they can play, but it is also those other 23 hours of the day, you know?
That's all it is.
Yeah, and hanging in the front lounge of the bus. Like, it's all about that hang and people who will go, you know, deep with you and will want to talk about life. Like, I'm not the let's have a million shots party bus. Like, that's just not my vibe. I'm more the, like... let's talk about feelings. How's your heart doing?
That's the...
But it builds this like bond between you that is like inseparable. And,
yeah.
You know, you want everybody to be the best versions of themselves and be the best like husbands and wives and girlfriends and boyfriends and mothers and fathers that they ought, that they can be.
Right, right, right. And the dog's name is Hendrix. Why'd you find this dog? What kind of dog is it?
Hendrix, named after my favorite guitar player, Jimi Hendrix, of course.
Naturally.
And I wanted a small dog for sure because I travel so much and I knew if I was ever going to bring her on the bus, having a small dog
is important.
But I've always wanted to rescue a dog. I think rescuing animals, adopt, don't shop, is one of the coolest things that you can do. And so I was just looking for the right one, and I knew that my heart would feel it. And I had been looking for days and days and days, and I would find a dog and I was like, okay, maybe they're available. And then I would email them and they're like, it just got adopted yesterday. And I had looked for just days and days and spent like 8 hours a day just looking for the right dog. And eventually I like gave up. I was like, okay, it's just not time. It's just not the right time. And so I like shut my computer and I was like, all right, if it is the time, please send the right dog my way. I like literally said that out loud. And 20 minutes later, this girl from this shelter in New Orleans, who I had messaged her about another dog a few days before, sent me pictures of Hendrix. And she was like, hey, we just got this little girl in. Her name, or she's like a tiny little fox. Would you like to adopt her? And I was like, she's perfect. I will drive down right now. So
gathered the band, drove down, and got the dog.
Yeah.
This is cute. I've wanted a dog for a long time, but
you should get one.
I feel like there's so much work, and I travel a lot.
They are
a lot
of work.
You're the boss. Dog comes with me.
True. It's easier when I can bring the dog on the bus.
It's easier
But, you know, maybe talk to your peeps. They might let you.
Here's the problem. Like, I'm the kind of person who, like, I never like to ask anyone to do anything, because then I feel like...
Okay, you should not get a dog.
Then I feel like I don't ask anyone to drive me to the airport,
because
then I feel like they're going to ask me to pick them up from
the
airport. You're
going to need to ask all your friends to take care of your dog.
I don't want them to have to... To feel like I owe them.
Totally.
That's not what I want.
I get it.
So I just don't think I'm going. But I do feel like, come on, having a dog for like, do you feel just like happier having a dog in the house?
Right. There is a chemical.
There's a chemical reaction to having a dog.
Effect when you pet a dog, when you hold and cuddle with your dog. There is literally a chemical dopamine effect in your brain.
Yeah, it's literally science.
It's science.
It's literally science.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Lindsay L's here. I think we should call someone. Should we call someone?
Oh my gosh, I'm kind of nervous, but sure. We're calling from your phone, not mine.
Hang on. What if we called Allie? Should we call Allie?
Oh my gosh, we could call Allie.
Let's call Allie.
She's...
Let's see if she says anything entertaining for this podcast. Okay. Here we go. Let's see if she even picks up.
Do we have this? Hang on. Speakerphone? Yeah.
Oh, do you hear that?
Yeah. Okay, you need to tell her that she's on a podcast.
Yeah, I think this is the rules.
You're like, I got this, Lindsay.
Yeah.
I know all about the legal jargon.
I don't think she's going to pick up.
Let's just leave her a message.
We'll leave her a message.
Okay.
Yeah.
She's busy, you know?
She's a busy woman. She's not going to pick up the phone.
She's a badass.
She's not going to pick up. This is disappointing.
Hey, you've reached Allie.
Hello. Oh, there we go.
To send me a text.
What are we going to say?
Leaving a message.
We're just going to tell her how much we love her.
We're going to
tell
her how much we love her. Thanks.
We're
going to
say.
At the tone, please record your message.
I'm glad her thing didn't recite her number.
Yeah, right.
That would have been weird.
That would have.
Allie! It's Zach and Lindsay on the podcast. You're going to slap yourself when you realize you missed the opportunity to be on air with us.
Or maybe she'll be really grateful.
Or you might be really grateful. We miss you so much, and we love you, Allie. And it's Lindsay and Zach.
We love you.
We love you. And your voicemail will forever be a part of this episode.
Yes.
So we love you. Okay, we're done. We'll
Bye.
See if she calls. Lindsay L, she's on a new show. It's not a new show. It's season number 3, Canada's Got Talent. You need to go watch it.
Yeah.
The new show as well on PBS, American Anthems.
Yes.
And this is already out, but you can go to PBS.com and you can watch this for free.
PBS.org, I think.
I'm sorry,
and you can watch
PBS.
It for free.
PBS.org.
I think.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I think.
No, I watched it for free.
Okay,
go and you watch it.
Go watch. The episodes
are really
amazing.
Moving.
They're
it's really
inspiring.
Touching.
Yeah.
Yes. And Heart Theory, the last record.
Thank you.
Which has 12 stages of grief on it. There's an extra 5 stages.
Extra 5 stages.
It's unbelievable.
It's brain
And then
exploding.
And she's on the road.
Yeah.
Are you playing America?
Yeah, all the time.
All the time.
This is my home, baby.
You need to follow up. Here's the other thing I want to ask you.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not Allie. I thought it was someone else. Here's what, we had Brian Kelly on the podcast.
Amazing.
And he was giving really good advice about how to DM people.
Okay.
You must get a lot of crazy DMs, right?
I'm sure he does.
No, but
I'm
you
sure
must get does. A lot of DMs
oh,
also,
Oh, do I?
Right?
Yeah, I do get a lot of crazy DMs.
Do you get a lot of creepy people DMing
yes,
you?
Yes,
yes, right?
Yeah.
What's the best way to DM someone? Is there a way?
It depends what you want, like what your intention. Like, are you trying to get a date?
Maybe. Is okay. there any way that a fan could DM Lindsay and create a relationship with them, or is it really hard?
Yeah, I DM with fans all the time. And
really?
Yeah, I love being able to like one-on-one talk to them.
But do you become friendly with any of these people, or is it hard to become?
There are a lot of fans, especially super fans, who've been to so many shows that that I DM all the time. I have like good relationships with. Okay, if you're trying to, okay, Zach, if you were going to DM somebody to try to pick somebody up,
yeah,
I would give you the advice.
What's the advice? Give me the advice here, Lindsay.
I mean,
this
for me, it is always comedic. Like, it's
comedy.
Always, yeah, it's always like that clever one-liner that like compliments them on something that isn't creepy.
Really?
Do not be creepy.
This is so hard because I feel like I always try to go almost dry. Like, hey, like let's get coffees or like, hey, we should get drinks sometime or something.
Yeah, that's
but that sucks.
No. Yeah, it's not good.
What is funny?
It's boring.
I don't know what I can't even be funny. Well, what is like, how do you say what's funny?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it would like you need to go to their page and you need to do some research. You need to do some stalking, some Instagram diving. And then you find, you know, like, I don't know, maybe they have like a little dog or something. And then you like crack a little joke about the dog or like send a smiley face. Like you make just a nice, sweet gesture that will make them smile.
That's how you, and what if you already know the person? Then it's like.
Okay, if you already know the person, then should you be asking them out?
No, probably not.
I mean, maybe if you already know the person, then you should know a lot about them.
So then there should be so much to be funny about.
Yeah. And it just is like, don't make it creepy funny.
I'm never funny. I never know what to write that's funny. Like, I feel like when I'm on like dating apps or whatever, I never know good opening lines. I'm always like, hey, I don't know. It's not good. Doesn't that suck though?
I mean, okay.
What do you think is a good opening line on like a dating app?
Doesn't necessarily have to be funny, it should be like clever. Or like sweet or like something more than just, hey, want to go for coffee? Because like
that's
not fun.
So boring,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so boring.
This is informative, actually.
Yeah.
Brian said the best thing to do is to meet people IRL. He was like, don't DM anyone.
Yeah.
It's like, meet them at a supermarket.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
That is totally the best. But sometimes in an age like technology,
it's really hard, right?
It's hard. Like, so many of my friends have met
Are you
their
seeing anyone right now? Can
soulmates.
I ask? Is this private?
It is private.
Private.
But...
we'll keep it private. Keep it private. That sounds like yes.
That is maybe.
Maybe.
But. So many of my friends have met their like husbands and wives off of dating websites. So I actually don't like bash them at all. I just say you have to like be picky about like what you want, and when you find something awesome, then just be clever, you know?
Clever. You need to be clever. Easy for a songwriter to say.
Yeah, but it can be easy things like, okay, if I saw your picture, I'd be like, your blue glasses are amazing.
Is
like,
that clever? What is that?
I mean, I don't know. Or like,
that's what you would say?
Blue glasses are my favorite kind of glasses. Like, it doesn't need to be, that's
that
not funny.
That sounds more clever, but not your blue glass, I guess. Is that what's going to work?
I don't know. This is like off the top of my head. So I'm like, but you like scroll through their pictures
and then
find something that it clearly shows that they like. And then you like, you know, you go off that.
That's
your content.
You need context.
Yeah.
The point is, don't go in cold just DMing
exactly.
people random. You need
don't
context.
Don't ask them for coffee.
Don't ask them for coffee.
Yeah.
That is so boring.
It's so boring.
That is never going to work.
No.
Context.
Yes.
We've learned a lot here from Lindsay.
Amazing.
This has been fantastic. Lindsay, the special, the publicist was like, we need to plug the special.
Yeah.
This is, everyone needs to go watch this, seriously.
Yeah. It's so,
it's actually
so
really touching. It's 22 minutes.
It really is.
It's really short and it bangs like a whole, like it's, the whole series is actually great. The episode with Jennifer Nettles was really great.
It's so amazing. Yeah. The whole series is awesome. And go listen to Let the Words Come Out. And
you have to listen to it.
Yeah.
It's you and Christian Bush on this. That's a good combo. I feel like you guys, I like seeing you guys create. There's like a moment there where you guys are creating the song together.
Thank you.
And he's kind of like, yup, that's it. And he, like when you talk to him, he's just like so wise seeming, right?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
He's amazing to write with.
This is really great. Everyone needs to go watch it.
Yeah.
Lindsay L. in the studio, thanks for coming by. What have we left out? Has anything been unsaid?
This is amazing. I love your setup. You have like the coolest setup and lights and cameras. Like, Zach, you got it going on. I'm proud of you.
I'm trying. I'm proud of Lindsay. How often do you practice guitar? All the time?
Yeah, I try.
Do you have a thing at this point where you're like a routine? Like, I don't know. I never know what to practice anymore. Like,
Not really. I just play music that I like. I play along with music that I love.
That's
that
kind of the thing.
I got
the Corey Wong course, actually.
Nice.
I paid for it.
Amazing.
And you know what? The first lesson in the course, I haven't gotten past it.
Okay.
No, but not...
Well, that's great.
But not because I'm not... Not because I'm not doing it, because the first lesson is so hard, and I want to kind of like perfect it before I go to the next lesson.
By the time you finish that course, you are going to be like
a better guitar player.
So much. That's what they're meant for.
Has anyone ever approached you like True Fire or any of these? Has any of these companies ever approached you to do a guitar course? I feel like you would do a great guitar course.
I do have a guitar course, actually.
Do you?
If you go on like my Instagram link tree or whatever, the link in my page, I did do a little like beginner intermediate guitar course.
Yeah.
I start from like very, very beginner because I had a lot of fans being like, Lindsay, you've inspired me to start playing guitar.
I bet you inspire a ton of people to play guitar.
So I did like beginner, and then I did like intermediate of like some of the crazy concepts that I wrap my head around and that open up my, you know, muso brain on guitar playing.
What do you think that is? Like, is it like the cage system or like, was there like
cage
a moment that really worked for you?
Like Nashville number system is part of it. Like even just like studying patterns in certain boxes and then developing on that. So yeah, if you are interested, go check it out.
Where how do people check that?
Just go to my Instagram page
Instagram
and like
page.
The link in my bio, and then it'll see like guitar lessons with me or play guitar.
I bet
with
this is a good course. I bet
so,
Lindsay L.
Yeah.
Guitar course. All right, Lindsay L. in the studio. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks.
We'll
Zach.
See you guys next time. Woo. We get it.
Such a natural.